The Athletic FC Podcast Network.
Hello, I'm Taylor Payne, and welcome to the Revitalised Pod on the Tyne, your weekly Newcastle United podcast from The Athletic FC. Here we are again, chaps. I'm here with George Colgan. George, how are you?
Am I revitalised? I've just turned up to this podcast recording 22 minutes late.
Yeah.
Thereby, in Sir Bobby Robson's old words, I've missed the train. Not only have I missed the train, I've possibly missed the bus replacement service and also missed the following train.
But you thought you were 8 minutes early, so...
Yeah, so I'm in that... I feel slightly shamefaced, but also slightly aggressive, because in my own head, I'm 8 minutes early. I thought I timed this perfectly,
yeah,
and I haven't. So I'm not sure if I count as revitalised.
Yeah, there's no such thing as on time, George. You're either late or early. And you, sir, are very, very late.
I am. I apologise to all concerned. I've let myself down, mainly.
Chris, how are you feeling about the whole thing?
Well, I mean, it sort of ruins what I was just about to say, but I'll just refer this to specifically to you, Taylor, and I just want to say that I think you are very good at what you do, and that will be relevant to the rest of this podcast as we go on to it.
Oh, I know what you're getting out there.
What does that mean?
Yeah, in this context, what does that mean, though, Chris?
Well, you're just very good at presenting the podcast and being on time, the actual time we're meant to be here, so...
So this is very much Mikel Arteta damning with faint praise. You're praising Taylor for being on time.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, you're very good at what you'll do, being on time.
It's a compliment wrapped in an insult, basically. Or the other way.
Wrapped in a fist, wrapped in a nuclear bomb.
Right then, yes, we are weekly again this season, as you know, but so much has happened this week, we could probably put out three shows and still not have enough time to fit it all in. Here we go, let's start. Newcastle United 2, Chelsea 0, and Newcastle United 1, Arsenal 0. Two games against opposition from London, two teams, or at least two sets of fans, who had big ideas about coming to St James's Park and teaching us a lesson. And at the end of it all, two teams sent packing. George, Eddie Howe's Newcastle have returned.
Yeah, two really, really good performances, two really good occasions. It feels like it's been coming in some ways. You know, we've been talking about looking for the kind of plus points from this difficult run of form. But that Chelsea game, I just think, was so crucial. You could see the confidence flowing back into the team, that early Anthony Gordon tackle setting the tone, and the team was set up in an interesting way, a new way, which we will discuss. And it's felt like over the last two games that some questions have finally been answered about the makeup of the team. And yeah, hallmarks, as Eddie Howe said after the Arsenal game, sort of hallmarks of the way they played in the Champions League qualifying campaign.
Absolutely, yeah.
Brilliant to see that still in the locker, aggressive, front-footed, not always dominating the ball, but dominating the makeup of the game, big performances across the pitch, proper team effort, some great reminders about the best teams not necessarily being made up of the best players, but everybody pulling in the same direction. And yeah, really, really good, really encouraging. It's, you know, it's not the end, it's only the start of something, really, but just, yeah, great fun.
Chris, those remarks from Mikel Arteta, we'll come back to that now. Was he paying a compliment to Newcastle or an insult, or was it a bit of both?
I think it was very much both. It was said as if it was a compliment, but you could tell it was almost through gritted teeth. I mean,
there's always saltiness with Mikel Arteta.
I mean, I was
always
looking at last year's disgrace press conference, repeated disgrace, it wasn't quite the same as that, but he accepted that his team was sort of didn't deserve necessarily to win, although he spoke about them having the bigger chances, which I suppose they did have some big chances, albeit neither side had loads. But he kept talking about, I think it was about three or four times, he used that same phrase about Newcastle are very good at what they do. And he also, this was the bit which basically you saw the insult in it, was he kept on saying, and they dragged us down to that. They dragged us into playing that sort of way. It was almost like an excuse for why his team weren't very good on the day and why Newcastle largely were the better side. So I think there was frustration on his part that clearly he'd had a game plan going into the match and it wasn't to allow Newcastle to play the way Newcastle want to play, which is to smother the opposition, to be quicker than them, to, as we saw in the second half, bring that sort of shithousery back, the gamesmanship that Newcastle showed, the stifling of what Arsenal wanted to do. And it was Newcastle who managed to impose themselves on Arsenal rather than the other way around. So yes, I think it was a combination of both, but there was definite saltiness within it.
I love this idea of they didn't allow us to play football the way we wanted to. How dare they dragging us down to their level with their nonsense? And it's like, how, Mikel, do you just expect us, especially at home, to just roll over and allow you to tickle our tummies and say, there you go.
But also,
it's just nonsense.
Also, sort of Arsenal have reinvented themselves over the last kind of couple of years into a far more kind of like pragmatic team, capable of using the dark arts. They out Newcastle not too long ago. So it's all a bit of a kind of misnomer that I thought Arsenal were really poor by their own standards on the day. There was no invention from them. But, you know, to interpret those remarks in a different way, Newcastle were absolutely excellent at dealing with Arsenal's threats. I mean, the way they handled Saka, for example, who we know is an absolutely wonderful footballer, is at the heart of everything that, you know, everything good that Arsenal do. He was controlled brilliantly by Newcastle as a team. And in that sense, he's right, you know, that they found a way of closing Arsenal's threat down. But, you know, the chief fault for what happened to Arsenal on Saturday was Arsenal. They were poor by their own standards. And as you say, Taylor, it's not up to Newcastle to give them freedom of St. James's Park to do what they want to do. And, you know, Newcastle were excellent in everything that they did.
Now, I know it's early to be introducing emails into the equation here, but let's do it anyway. We've got an email from Paul. I was at my local butcher's on Saturday morning. He gave me a free sample of a new product called Woff's Fortune Sausages. Inside, I found a greasy piece of paper with a cryptic message printed on it. Attack the Gallagher end in the first half. Get off to a strong start and great blessings shall be yours. have you been infiltrating sausage companies again, Chris? What's going on?
Well, you know, that's what I do with my spare time. Just on this, I was going to mention that Eddie Howe himself did say in his post-match press conference that he thought that defending the Gallagher in the second half helped Newcastle, because he basically said everyone was on the same page. To counter my own point that I've made, it didn't work particularly well against Brighton, did it? And Newcastle, Bruno Guimaraes is still yet to win a toss at home in the Premier League.
He has to have the captaincy taken off him.
Has he not won a toss yet? That's incredible.
No. Which they did in midweek, didn't they, when he wasn't captain? So,
yeah. It's like, what is the job of a captain in football? I mean, it's like, you just win the toss.
Are they flipping it and going, heads or tails, Bruno? And he's just going, oh, eggs. I don't know.
Yes. Yes.
Because usually it might be what, every three or four games, Newcastle might get turned around and you hear that a little bit sort of jokey booing almost in the crowd. But it felt on Saturday like it was a genuine, I mean, I know it was Arsenal as well, but it does feel like it's a big thing now. It's just because Newcastle are getting turned around every single Premier League game at home.
Amazing. We have to talk about Lewis Hall, Joe Willock, and Joe Linton on that left-hand side, causing havoc, rotating positions, getting up and down the pitch, and just generally being a nuisance. They were wonderful, and that left-hand side combination of those three just kicked Newcastle into life, didn't it, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, just before we come onto this specifically, I was surprised on Saturday when I took my seat at St. James's Park that George turned to me and said, I'm really actually fascinated about the blend of the midfield today. Ooh. And it's something I've been thinking about a lot and how this will work tactically. And I genuinely was gobsmacked. I was lost for words as to why.
I talked a lot about XG in the pod last week, Chris, as well. When you were off, I don't know. It was like something happened.
Have you hit your head recently, or are you okay?
I've got a massive craving for sausages as well. I've like become Chris in the week off. No, but I was fascinated because, like, having seen, you know, having thought a lot about Newcastle, about being this, like, series of questions or series of problems. And it's like, you look at the way the team are playing and you've, you know, obviously in midfield, for most of the season, when fit, you've got Tonali, you've got Bruno, you've got Jolinton. It's like all really good players in their own rights, all internationals. And it's like, it's not working. There's too much space and kind of rejigging it around. And then seeing what happened against Chelsea, taking out Bruno, playing Tonali in the middle, and then that really different sort of equation along the whole left flank with Joe Linton sort of left wing. And
I love him there,
behind.
You know. I love Joe Linton there.
Oh, it's brilliant. And it is all about those, you know, those partnerships and, you know, trying to make these things work and trying to make a team stronger. Sort of mentioned earlier about best teams not necessarily being the best players, seeing Sean Longstaff come back into midfield and be really excellent. So much of that unseen work. And so I was fascinated with what he did on against Arsenal on Saturday. And it was kind of the same, you know, the same idea, albeit taking out Tonali, bringing back in Bruno, and the same sort of mix on the left, not quite in the same positions as they were against Chelsea, which was kind of fascinating. But that left side just looked so good. And Hall, I think, was exceptional against Saka.
He's been great for weeks, hasn't he, though? He's really consistent.
He has. But again, it's about the players around him. You know, you do go back to that game when Newcastle at the Emirates became the first team in the Champions League qualifying season to take points off Arsenal at home. Burn looked really exposed for 5 minutes against Saka, and then suddenly he and the rest of the team find a way of adapting to that threat. And they did the same thing on Saturday. That whole left side of the team was so strong. Really good. And like, you wouldn't have thought that one of the answers to the problems that Newcastle have had this season would have been moving Anthony Gordon to the right-hand side, but it's worked.
In terms of the left-hand side, I do prefer Joe Linton in that sort of role, mainly because I think he has more flexibility to be able to basically be a Swiss Army knife of everything. I mean, he basically played as a left-sided centre-half at times. He played as a left-winger. He played as a left-sided
midfielder. Corkscrew. A toothpick.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, all of those little things you need. But I really like that. Where sometimes I think in midfield, sometimes certainly this season, I think he's tried to be more of an out and out midfielder. Whereas I think he's best doing a little bit of everything, because I don't actually think he's good enough on the ball under pressure to be that sort of midfield position. And Willock gives them that flexibility to do that. Now, it was fascinating on Saturday, as George says, because he had a slightly different role.
Yeah.
Out of possession, he essentially was a number 10 / second striker. He was more advanced than a lot of other Newcastle players,
including Gillinton.
And he
played behind him against
exactly. Chelsea. And when Newcastle lost possession, it wasn't that Willock immediately retreated either. Until Arsenal had a sustained spell of possession, Willock would stay higher up the field. So there was definitely something Newcastle had tactically spotted. Now, I tried to ask Eddie Howe about it afterwards, and I butchered the question.
It was a terrible question.
It was a terrible question. And he just basically smirked and then said, it was sort of a tactical, but I don't really want to go into it. Oh, great. So I can't give you any exact insight. But what I think they were trying to do, and what you saw from Newcastle's goal, which I'm going to come on to in a second, was that Willock basically occupied, and he was someone extra alongside Alexander Isak, gave Arsenal someone else to think about. And that meant that Arsenal had to shift around a little bit, and there were pockets behind Declan Rice. But on the makeup of the side, on the midfield three, as it was, if you take out that Willock was essentially playing as number 10, the midfield three of Sean Longstaff, Bruno Guimaraes, Joe Willock, and then Joe Linton. Now, I'd written about this before, and we revisited this over the weekend, that during the 2022-23 season, Newcastle's own internal analysis showed that the most balanced side they had, particularly in big games and especially away from home, was when those four were in the same team. They've played together 13 times in the Premier League. Newcastle have won 10 of them, drawn 3, and lost none. They score more, concede fewer, and have a higher points return when they play together. Now, that isn't just a small sample side. That's quite a large one. They didn't play together at all in the Premier League last season because of... They didn't start together at all in the Premier League last season, largely because of Joe Willock's fitness problems and also Joe Linton's fitness problems. But you can see there that it is interesting. I refer to it as being like back to the future, because this for Newcastle was them having to go back to refine themselves a little bit, that Sandro Tonali was taken out of it. Joe Linton goes left wing, despite the fact all the debate has been, should it be Anthony Gordon there? Should it be Harvey Barnes there? The answer was neither is going to be there. Or the answer at the weekend was neither is going to be in that position. That's why I thought that was fascinating.
This has just struck me, but you mentioned Harvey Barnes there. I mean, it's interesting to sort of think about his response to this, because that team really against Chelsea was a bit of a kick in the nuts for him.
Yeah.
How mixes things up on the left, puts Gordon to the right, and instead of bringing him in, has brought Gillinton in. Now, I think that's valuable for everybody. This is exactly the kind of stuff that we've been talking about for weeks now. It's like, if Harvey Barnes sees that and sulks, that's not going to be any good for him. It's not going to be any good for the team. There's no evidence to suggest he should do or would do. But if he's now thinking to himself, oh, Christ, I'm really got to raise my game here to get into that team, that's what you want. And, you know, if that now means he's on the bench for the foreseeable future, he has to make an impact when he comes on. And that's what Newcastle have been lacking so far this season, because they've not made, you know, big transfers over the past couple of windows. They've not had that sort of insane sense of being pushed by new signings. They've got to do it themselves. That's why these two performances and results are really, really important, because Howe can now say, look, it's working. We've got results. We've got big wins. It's up to the rest of you now to make me change my mind or change my team. That is so valuable. That's what Newcastle have been crying out for.
I'd eat walking.
Let's talk about that goal.
That's a good cross by Gordon. That's a really good goal. Alexander Isak at the Gallagate end of St James's Park. And that's exactly what Newcastle United wanted.
What a header. What a header that was from Isak. Just failed to clear the lines. I think Arsenal, first real chance that Newcastle have got to get themselves in front, and he finds himself, I think, in between the centre halves. But what a finish that is.
We were setting the tone early on, weren't we, with Harrison, Arsenal's defenders. We've got to talk about, as Alan called it, the cross from the 90s. And I know exactly what he means by that. It was Keith Gillespie onto the head of Tino Asprilla. It was David Ginola onto the head of Les Ferdinand. It was numerous wingers onto the head of Alan Shearer. It was a beautiful piece of football, a beautiful cross. The real Anthony Gordon has stood up, George.
Yeah, just absolutely fabulous. It's like, okay, so he's been pushed out to the right for the last kind of couple of games. We know that's not his preferred position. And so, you know, how will he respond? Well, there was good signs against Chelsea. And, you know, certainly sort of set the tone in the opening moments, and that kind of high pressing style caused Chelsea all sorts of problems in that match. And then I think in this game, we saw more of what he can offer from, you know, in an attacking sense. And that cross, yeah, it was so old school. It was brilliant. It was, if this was like an old school Newcastle performance in terms of 2 years ago, you know, as you say, this was like just beautiful.
First time
smashing
ball
across from the right, perfectly positioned. Isak, as Howe said afterwards, that's a really good goal for him to score. It's not the kind of goal that you associate Isak with.
Yeah.
But he found that space, and it was just a perfect, perfect header. Absolutely unplayable. And yeah, gorgeous. More of that, please. Happy with that.
Retreating back from the goal, it was in the build-up to it. Again, that I think that was, that showed the difference,
yeah,
the slight difference there was between the two sides in terms of how Newcastle managed to get the win on Saturday. It comes down to second balls. As I mentioned, Cher has the ball in defence. He lofts it sort of forward, and Joe Willock goes to head the ball. Partey comes in from right back and wins the header, but it goes to Alexander Isak, who gives it to Sean Longstaff. Then Sean Longstaff's pass out wide is beautiful. And if that pass isn't perfectly weighted, then Anthony Gordon can't make the first time cross as he does. And then Isak, as George mentions, really, really good header. And a stat nugget, which I've nicked from NUFC.com, but apparently all four of the headed goals that Alexander Isak has scored have been in the Gallagher end. In terms of Anthony Gordon on the right, I'm going to slightly disagree with George in terms of Wednesday. I didn't think he was as good as other people thought he was against Chelsea. I thought his body language wasn't brilliant. I agree with the pressing to certain tones, but I thought throughout part of the match he looked like a player who didn't want to be out on the right. I didn't think that was the case against Arsenal. I thought that his body language, his attitude, he led the press again. He was the one who harried. There was one moment during the first half where Trossard tries to advance down the left wing.
Yeah.
And Gordon, I think it's Livramento, both of them follow him back. And eventually Trossard just ends up running it out of play, and Eddie Howe immediately sort of hand slaps Gordon as if to praise him, say this is the sort of thing that we need. And I do think Gordon can be good on the right hand side. I'm being consistent that I said towards the back end of last season, despite the small sample size, I actually really like Anthony Gordon on the right, because I think in some ways, sometimes when he's on the left-hand side, as effective as he can be, I also think sometimes he overplays. I think on the right, he doesn't have the opportunity to do that as much. He can put the ball into the box. So I like him on the right-hand side. I do think that he can be very good in that position. And it might not be the long-term solution, but for now, I think it would be a strange decision for Howe to change that system going to an informed Forest side next Sunday, particularly with Joe Linton, the extra height that he brings, those stats that I mentioned earlier, particularly away from home, the way that midfield balance has worked potentially in the past. It seems like that might be the formula to go to the City Ground next weekend.
With every beautiful cross, we have to have a beautiful finish. And we talk about Alexander Isak. That header was sublime. He got up so well and powered it in. And even if he's not quite peaking, he is scoring. And that is important. 12 goals in his last 12 games at St. James's Park, and 3 in his last 3 as well. He's playing brilliantly, George, and he's doing the things we need him to do. He's getting in those positions. His body language didn't look quite right at the start of the season, but now he looks like he wants the ball. Now he looks like he's firing.
Yeah, and, you know, there's been all that uncertainty over the summer for him and for everybody. He's had that injury as well, and so he's had to kind of deal with that. Just didn't quite look like he was firing on all cylinders, but he's definitely getting back there. And, yeah, it's also about every area of the team functioning, and he's getting into positions and he's being found. You know, that's the other thing. It's like in the early games of this season, he wasn't being found. He was very isolated. The team wasn't gelling. There were spaces in midfield. And suddenly, once you've got a balanced team, you find that the striker gets more chances, gets more of the ball. We get to see more of what he can do. And that's what gets him back into form. But it's the same for everybody. You know, you could... The confidence against Chelsea, it was like a tangible thing. You could see it flowing back into their veins as they played against Chelsea. And it was like The crowd suddenly started believing again. It was like, oh yeah, we're back. And then they carried that through. It feels like a cop out to kind of make a big thing about it, except they're all talking about it in Newcastle, both in their press conferences, conversations, and, you know, privately. It's about how do we get the confidence back? Because if you're not confident and you dip 1 or 2%, then you will not win games of football. That's the difference at this level, at Premier League level. It truly is. And so suddenly seeing this aggressive, front-footed Newcastle team, everybody knows what they're supposed to be doing, everybody full of form, you start to see the positive results come back, and, oh man, yeah, so good in these last two games.
Just on that confidence and self-belief point, I just want to sort of reiterate that, because before the Chelsea game in midweek, between the two Chelsea matches, I had conversations or exchanged messages with three separate people inside Newcastle, each of their own accord raised that themselves, that basically the players need a win for confidence wise.
Yeah.
And so they would, it was something they were talking about internally. And I mean, the players spoke about it afterwards, Howe spoke about it afterwards, but going into those matches, it was that it was almost, when you look at particularly the Brighton game, they believed certainly for the first half that so much was right. But when you don't get that final end result, when the ball doesn't go in the back of the net, then that ebbs away at that self-belief, and eventually you need something you need confirmation of that, eventually affirmation, and that's what they got.
But this, it's such an important point, Chris. I mean, we will chat a bit later on about Eddie Howe's 3-year anniversary, but you go back to that Leeds away match in his first season. You know, they got that one win, but that was all they got. And then, you know, again, people around the training pitch were saying, oh, he's great, it's brilliant, training's fantastic, but like, you know, the stats aren't great, you know, in terms of wins, in terms of points. And Howe said the same thing after the Chelsea League game leading up to the Cup game. He said, in our last few performances, you can see signs. I'm happy with our performances, but the worry is confidence. That's the concern. And everybody, you need it. You need that affirmation. That's why he can now, as I said before, he can now say to Harvey Barnes, I'm sorry, I know you might be pissed off, you've not been picked on the left, but we've just won two games, so you've got to raise your game. And he can say, okay, it's working. I knew it was working. I told you, keep doing these things. Keep playing as you are. It'll turn. It's turned. And that is, I mean, it's like the biggest truism in football. It's the biggest cliche, but it's wins, you know, it's wins that give you confidence. And then once you've got one, the idea is that you then go on a run. And yeah, so absolutely vital spell.
Fulham in October 2022 was the same. That was when Newcastle started the season, and then they won that game and then went on a run. That's what you've got to hope is going to happen now.
Yeah.
That Arsenal team selection certainly raised a few eyebrows, though. Lloyd Kelly probably had warranted a start after the Chelsea performance. He did really well. Byrne came back into the defence, though, and he did well against Arsenal. That's great to see, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, Lloyd Kelly played as a left-sided centre-back, and I think that you can see there that maybe he's just a bit more comfortable in that position. He's played both fairly regularly for Bournemouth. Maybe he's even more so towards the left-back position. That's where he'd largely played at the start of the season for Newcastle and hadn't necessarily convinced. But again, that was a changing left-hand side. He didn't have the Willock Joe Linton access necessarily on a regular basis that Lewis Hall now had at the weekend. But playing him at centre-half, what he gives, which is different to the other fit centre-halves at the moment, is that recovery pace, the ability to sort of get back. And I think that really helps Newcastle. He did look good, but Dan Byrne largely has been consistent so far this season. Yes, he had a difficult day down at Chelsea last weekend, but so did quite a few players. And so coming back, there was never really any doubt in my mind that he would come back into the side. But Lloyd Kelly is now pushing for that position. That's what you want. And I think that's what you're also seeing from Newcastle now, is that they've largely had a relatively fit squad for most of the season. Not a massively deep bench, but they have had a stronger bench than last season. But now you have players who are actually pushing each other in terms of now they are putting in performances. And I think, and Byrne knew he had to come back into the side and perform, and that's what he did. And that's hopefully what's going to happen in other positions. That Barnes came on the right wing for Gordon later on. It was a largely defensive role he played against Arsenal, but he looked good in that role. He came on and he looked like someone who had a point to prove. And that's what Newcastle need. That's what they've wanted. That's what they didn't have last season. And hopefully they're starting to get that back, where everyone is going to start pushing each other again.
George, we have to mention Sandro Tonali as well, arguably man of the match against Chelsea in a central role. But Sean Longstaff proved his value with tireless performances in both games. Quality pass for Gordon for the Isak goal, like we said, in the Arsenal game. It's great to see Sean playing football.
Yeah, I'll mention Tonali first, as you asked about that first. I thought he was outstanding against Chelsea. I really did. And I think the interesting thing, I mean, it almost sounds like a negative point, and it's not meant to be, but I think we've seen in these last two games there's been much better balance with either Tonali playing in midfield or Bruno playing in midfield. Now, yes, they've both contributed when they've come on in these games, which is good. If you're picking your most talented 11, then of course both of them are starting every week. But it's felt like there's been much more control. There's been less space for opposition to use when only one of them plays. And I think it's kind of fascinating what happens with the two of them moving forward. Obviously, you want them both to play because they're both so good. But again, it's that great lesson. Well, there's two things. I mean, firstly, you know, when Bruno coming back into the team against Arsenal, maybe there's a few thoughts in his head about, I need to turn it on today. And I thought Bruno was excellent against Arsenal. That's really positive. What happens with those two, I think, is fascinating. And again, yes, we come back to that point about the best teams not necessarily being made up of the best players. So we've seen that over the last two games. Sean doesn't make the Hollywood 11 for Newcastle. He doesn't make the Stardust 11, but he is so valuable to the team. He does the team's running. He drags players out of position and the opposition. He works his bollocks off. He is capable of quality. And the team has just looked much better balanced with him in it. So I'm really pleased for him, just as I'm really pleased for all of them. And yeah, I spoke to him after the Arsenal match, and I started off by asking about whether he could feel the confidence coming back into the team.
A little bit. I mean, I think it's the first time in a while we've scored the first goal, so yeah. It tends to be a bit of an easier game when you're playing with the lead instead of trying to chase it, and teams maybe have to come out a bit more. They have to take more risks than being able to just sit in and defend against you. The only thing that breeds confidence is how you train every day, how you go about your work every day. You're the only person that can give yourself confidence. If you could take a shot of it and drink it, I think it'd be the most expensive drink in the world. So the pressure and the pleasure of playing for Newcastle is when you're winning, it's great. And when you have a couple of bad results, it's time to tear everything up and get a whole new group of players and stuff. And so I think for us, it's like you sort of stay very even. And whether you like today, we've won two games, but that doesn't mean now we're suddenly a great team again. We'll have to keep working, and ultimately we'll get reward. Like, players aren't stupid, they're well aware of everything that goes on in the summer and sort of the way the game is now, and that's why you're professional. You should do the right things no matter what, really. And I always say, I think you get rewarded for doing the right thing always, whether that's here or it'll be away from you with people or whatever's called financial fair play these days. I think as long as you give everything you have and work as hard as you can, I think ultimately you'll get rewarded. And like I said, we do that as a team, and it's days like today where it sort of pays off, and that's had a great win for us.
So here's your chance to say that Newcastle are better when you play.
Yeah, so that was me at the end sort of being a little bit cheeky there, because of that stat about, which Chris might know off the top of his head, about the team with Sean in it and the team not with Sean in it. And he'd sort of said earlier on in that chat that perhaps he's not the kind of person to shout about himself from the rooftops and all that kind of stuff. So I asked him about that at the end, but he certainly wasn't going to leap in and say that. But it's a great reminder for all of us, isn't it?
The stat that he's referring to was actually something I'd written about a couple of weeks ago, but then was obviously updated after the weekend, is that under Howe, Newcastle's top flight win ratio when Longstaff starts is 54.2% and only 37.2% when he doesn't. And this season, Newcastle are unbeaten in the five games Longstaff started and have failed to win any of the five league games he hasn't. So yes, I mean, the stats there are fairly compelling. It's one of those things where Howe himself afterwards talked about as well. He says, we do look at those stats. He says, it doesn't tell you everything, but it can give you an indication of something. And they are aware of statistics like that. But I just want to ask George, were you interviewing Sean Longstaff from a goldfish bowl in that? I mean, just the audio there was... You sounded like you were in an aquarium or something.
Is it the baths, yeah?
Celtic baths.
I sworn I could have smelled chlorine there while I was listening to that. That was amazing.
Yes. I do like Sean Longstaff interview though, because he isn't just a standard football interview. He's got a bit of personality about him. He's a bit chippy. You could argue maybe sometimes chippy, maybe a little bit too chippy, because I think he does fight back against some of that noise which can be out there. But I do like the fact that he doesn't just give the sort of run of the mill answer. He will be honest, and I do like that about him.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he was in the whole kind of interview, he was quite quite front-footed towards journalists, sort of saying that collectively, you know, the media helps set the tone about the debate if it's about his position in the team and things like that. And fair enough. I mean, you know, my thoughts on Sean are clearly established. I think he's great. I think the last two games should serve as a reminder. You know, we have this narrative since Newcastle got to fourth and got into the Champions League. We talk about players not being good enough, or, you know, fans talk about players not being good enough. And it is a reminder that these players were good enough to get us into the Champions League. And in the last two games, they've certainly shown they're good enough. And, you know, just to repeat, it's not about your individual quality. It's about what you bring to the team. And that was the magnificent thing about these two brilliant results. Yes, there've been some moments of individual quality in it, but it's absolutely how the collective have played. Those partnerships across the pitch. We talked about the left side. Wonderful. Sean, absolutely integral in that midfield. And it's great to see. We want that across the pitch. We want it across the squad, because then Newcastle will thrive.
100%. Let's talk about Tino Livramento as well. He had a couple of great games, Chris. He's really coming on, isn't he? He's come in for Kieran Trippier this season. Trippier obviously out injured, and he's starting to find his feet. Struggled a little bit at first, but he's starting to play really well now.
Yeah, I thought it was his best performance of the season, his best performance in quite a long while, all round, particularly defensively. Lewis Hall got a lot of the plaudits, and rightly so to a large degree, but I was actually more impressed to a certain degree by Livramento, because we haven't seen Lewis Hall be building towards that, whereas Livramento, that was almost the performance I'd sort of been waiting for from him, and I thought he was very, very good. Again, with him and Anthony Gordon don't necessarily have that relationship on the right-hand side. They play on the left a few times last season, but it's not that wasn't a regular combination necessarily for them either. So for them to have built that relationship with Sean Longstaff and that defensive element, and Longstaff and Gordon helped Livramento as well. I mean, Gordon, there's the moment late in the match where Arsenal look like they're going to have a chance to have a shot in the box, and Gordon runs back and nicks it from him, and that's the sort of defensive work that every single person in the Newcastle shirt offered. So hopefully this is the start for Livramento this season to really kick on a little bit. He got the call up to the England squad. He's been in the last two, hasn't played for England yet. You would assume he's going to be in the next England squad as well, whether Lewis Hall joins him.
Should do.
I think for Livramento, even though he started the season in the side, the fact that Trippier didn't go anywhere, there was maybe always that looming idea that, you know, Trippier will be restored to the 11 at some stage. And having that competition again, now that Trippier came back in and largely was successful in that role, Livramento has stepped up again. He's going to have to keep performing like that. But he offers a different sort of right back in that position to what Kieran Trippier does, in terms of he carries the ball more than he necessarily crosses it. But it was defensively, I was very, very impressed with him.
Yeah, and you know, we glanced on Lewis Hall. I then took the conversation in a different direction earlier, but just to repeat about how good he was, and how good he has been consistently over the past few weeks. And you know, we talked a lot last season about the work that Newcastle had done in the summer after qualifying for the Champions League, about whether it counts as a good window, and sometimes you can't tell, you know, for 12 months, for 2 years, and down the line. But what Newcastle thought they were doing at that point by signing Hall and Livramento was they felt it was the area of the team, the squad, where there was the biggest drop-off in terms of quality, and they felt that they were plugging that gap, you know, with theoretically for years to come. Now, Lewis Hall, this time last year, for most of last season, you were scratching your head thinking, you know, Newcastle have got injury after injury. He can't get into the team. Within the training ground, they were saying, it's just not there yet. He's not ready. And it's up to him to prove that, you know, that his work that he does on the training pitch is good enough. He recognized that himself. I think he found it he's talked about it. He found it very, very difficult training under Eddie Howe and sort of, you know, getting to grips with those demands. But here we are, a year down the line, a year and a bit down the line, and he looks made for it. He looks built for it. And so perhaps now we look back on that window and feel differently, you know, than we did at the time, that they felt that if, and Howe talked about it on Saturday, that if they hadn't signed him when they signed him, that they would miss that chance. And he was just so good. And it is a victory for perseverance and for working hard. That's basically the answer to everything, but he was fantastic.
He was. We have to mention somebody else who was fantastic again in that Chelsea game as well, and that's Emil Kraft. We haven't spoken about him yet, but he came in and played right back against Chelsea, and he was absolutely colossal, finishing the game off where he just decided he was Franz Beckenbauer for 5 minutes and just strode up the pitch, taking on all comers and setting up a chance for Will Osula. He was brilliant, Chris, in that game. I was so impressed with him.
Yeah, he was my man of the match. I know other people give it to other people, but I just thought that coming in and the roles, how dependable he is and the different roles he's been asked to perform. He's played centre-back early in the season in a four, which is not his position. He's played right centre-back. And then to come in at right-back again, which is his natural position. And you can actually see why, what Newcastle spotted in him pre-takeover when they actually signed him. And he didn't necessarily see that early on in his career, but he has an engine. He gets up and down. He just makes good decisions. He isn't flashing anything that he does, but he's just calm and he makes clever decisions. And I thought that he really just added an assurance and an experience to that back line. So no, I thought he was very good. And I thought he could have felt hard done by that he wasn't in the side against Arsenal at the weekend. But Howe referred to him as Krafu and said that's in his press conference on Friday. And he said that's what we call him internally. That became a nickname from internally. But he heaps praise on all his players, but he especially so on Kraft, because he says you need those players who recognize that they're not going to start every week, that they don't throw the toys at the pram, but that they train to the very highest levels. And then when they are required, they can perform like that in different roles. And that's what Emil Kraft has done so far this season.
Yeah.
He's another one of those players, isn't he? Like Sean Longstaff. He's quite unassuming. A lot of his good work goes under the radar. You don't see it because it's not trendy and it's not fashionable. It's not YouTube clippable. He's not running around beating his chest and celebrating tackles and stuff like that. And while we love to see that, I love to see players just quietly going about their business and doing really well. And he has done so well for Newcastle. And from a fan's point of view, I know for a fact that people were questioning whether he was good enough to play for Newcastle United a couple of seasons ago. He's been so good. Like, I can't remember a time when he's let us down. I can't remember a time when he's messed up.
He's fabulous. But then you also take away the game experience, the game day, match day experience. And if you put those standards and that not letting everybody down into the training pitch on a daily basis, week in, week out, and then think about how valuable that is. So if you've got him, do you know what I mean?
And
so if you've got him, Mr. Reliable, playing like that, working his bollocks off, desperate to get into the team, but probably knows more often than not, he's not going to be in the team, but setting those standards, one of those people that who set those standards on the training pitch. And then when he comes in the team, you know, performing admirably or brilliantly or excellently. And that, you need those standard setters wherever you are. And that's why people like him are absolutely worth their weight in gold, because they set the tone. They help set the tone for the whole team and the whole club.
Love him. Absolutely love him. Right. Also, that draw at Brentford isn't looking too bad at all in the cup, is it? So, speaking of Brentford, listener Michael recorded it live in a pub. Here's how it went down. Now, remember, Newcastle are ball number six. Love it.
I'm pissed just listening to that.
That's incredible.
Telling numbers to F off is a new one, yeah.
Let's just make football that. That's all you need. You don't need anything else. That's a new sport on its own. Six.
Thank you for doing that, Michael.
Love that so much.
Brilliant. If I was Thomas Frank, I'd be pinning that audio clip up on the dressing room. How would you do that? How would you pin up a pin audio up on the? You can probably do it these days. You can do anything, can't you?
Home draw though, Chris. Yeah. That's what we like to see.
Yeah. You couldn't have asked for anything. That's what Newcastle have wanted. I think that how strong they've been in this competition when they've played at home in recent years. Brentford are a good side. They've been playing well this season, but relatively compared to some of the other sides who are still in it, the opposition is probably one of the better ones you could have had as well. But still, that will be an absolutely massive night in December. So one looking forward to.
Bring it on.
Definitely. Right. Okay. Let's have a little break, chaps. We'll be back in just a moment to talk about Eddie Howe's 3-year anniversary.
It's been a roller coaster. Newcastle, of course.
So, Edward J.F. Howe celebrates 3 years in charge of Newcastle United this week. Not so much a roller coaster, more of a big dipper. We thought we'd look back at some of our personal highlights of the last 3 years. Who wants to get us started? Chris?
I'm still trying to get over Edward J.F. Howe. Could you see Eddie Howe as a president? Can you see him presidential in terms of... I suppose there has to be... You have to have a bit of a presidential tone about you to be able to be Newcastle United manager successfully. You've got to be that sort of guardian of the club in public and really reach out to supporters. And that's what he's done very, very well. And yeah, one of my highlights would be his very first match as Newcastle United head coach when he wasn't even in the dugout. And I remember vividly the evening before the match, this is going to sound very pretentious on my part. I was actually at a wine tasting in Blackfriars in the centre of Newcastle when that news broke. And then I'd already had a few wines and I had to file a line through, which thankfully the desk would have corrected all of the mistakes in. But then the game itself, the Eddie Howe's first match, was that crazy 3-3 draw against Brentford. And it felt like a match Newcastle sort of needed to win because they were already quite far into the season. And Eddie Howe had to watch that from the Hilton Hotel on the banks of the Tyne, and was in like direct communication with his backroom staff, and he just spoke about how that was probably the hardest match he's ever had to oversee and manage because he wasn't actually there, and he likes to feel the energy of the match. He likes to feel the flow of the game being on the touchline. He likes to feel that his presence is there if the players need it, and he wasn't there for that first match, that huge match in charge. And I think that just sort of sums him up, that man who's just so. Attention to detail is everything for him, and yet for his very first game in charge of Newcastle, he joins the wild roller coaster that is Newcastle United immediately, and it isn't actually on the touchline.
I distinctly remember how I felt for that game, and I just thought this isn't working. You know, this isn't going to work. It's like we're cursed. It's like, you know, you've got one chance to make your first impression, and he's got COVID and he's not there. And then this game that Newcastle absolutely had to win and should have won. They draw 3-3, and I remember just thinking afterwards, nah, It's like, it's not going to happen, which just shows what I know. But if we're talking about those very early moments, I want to kind of go back to his introductory press conference when I didn't have, you know, I certainly didn't have those feelings and that I had in that Brentford game. And, you know, it was a, you know, the way these things always are. It's like in the big media room at St. James's, and he talked about, you know, talked about the incredible moment in his life that this was, and sort of, recognizing the stature of the club. And when he was asked about what he'd been doing since his time out of the game, you know, he talked about visiting other clubs, and then he said, "I have been sorting my training sessions into digital format," and it wasn't something that was picked up anywhere really, but it just stayed lodged in my head, and I wrote about it, and it was like, okay, you know, 2021, the year that Newcastle went from analog to digital, and suddenly you realize that this was a, you know, this was a new era, it was a different change. And he also said, "I'm all in." And if you remember back to those days when a set of cranes went up outside the Gallagher end to clean the windows, yeah, and it was like we were hailing that as if Newcastle had signed Messi. And, you know, suddenly we had a manager coming into work at 6 o'clock in the morning, and it was like, this is, you know, this is like, again, we were hailing that as if we won the league. It was like, and it was just felt, it just felt different. And it was very nerdy, that moment. But it was like, yeah, we've got an absolutely detailed, obsessed manager, and it felt very new and very different.
We've got a bit of audio from Alan Shearer as well here. Let's have a listen to this.
Without sounding disrespectful, you're a nice guy, Eddie. You managed Bournemouth, played lovely football. Has that changed you or your thinking?
I think.
Nice guy Eddie Howe from
probably not as nice as I was, but I think, and I genuinely, I'm being serious when I answer that, because football does change you. I certainly see my personality change very gradually over time. That's not to say I'm not nice, yeah, when I need to be nice, but you get so consumed with football, you live the results, the training every day, that you're being the leader of the club at the moment in terms of on the pitch and everything that happens on it, you can't be too nice. You can, I'd like to think I'm still there for my players in every way personally, but I do think my personality has slowly changed. You can't overthink things too. Sometimes you have a decision to make and you know that you're affecting people's futures and their lives, but that's the right thing to do. And the emotional side has to play second, I think, to your critical eye of the decision. Then how you deliver that news, that then comes down to your personality, and you have to deliver things in the right way. I'm a firm believer in that, but there's a decision to be made, you have to make it.
That was obviously the interview that Alan and Eddie did, and I was there for that as well. And just those things that stood out, that he sort of recognised this part of our identity that I think we'd lost a bit, that, you know, we were sort of pushovers as a club. And, you know, easy points for other teams. And that sort of whole feeling about not being liked and not being in the game to be liked was so, so valuable. I fall in love with players. I fall in love with managers as well. Sometimes, you know, it's like he reminds me a lot of Rafa in some ways, that obsession with detail, not like a cuddly human being, but you want to cuddle him because he sort of recognizes something in you. And yeah, he has been brilliant. It doesn't mean he's not, you know, that people can't criticize him and things like that. But if you look at the past 3 years, it's been brilliant. And, you know, whatever happens from this point, he has earned himself, you know, a place in the club's history and folklore, because overall the last 3 years has just been astonishing. How about you, Taylor? What are your highlights?
I mean, I love Eddie dearly. I think he's been an absolute breath of fresh air since he came into Newcastle United. And it was what we needed, and I think what we needed as fans as well was to see someone who was incredibly committed to the work that he was doing, somebody who was prepared to put those hours in, like we said, and was all in, like you said, George. That for me was a big statement when he made that at the start. I thought, good, that's what I want to hear. You know, and you hear the stories of him going in 6 o'clock in the morning, leaving at 8, 9 o'clock at night, and I just think this is what Newcastle United need. We need somebody who's that focused and that determined. For me, though, highlights wise, I have to talk about the cup final, because Eddie Howe's the manager who took Newcastle back to Wembley for a cup final. And to me, that was massive. Like, that was huge. It was so important and so brilliant as a fan to get to go and experience that. And it's down to him that we got there. You know, that season was a fairy tale. It was an absolute fairy tale that season. And that cup final, I know it didn't go the way we wanted it to, but that showed me what it can be like. And I think that it can be like that under Eddie Howe. And it can be like that for a long time. And Eddie Howe's a young manager still. We have to remember this. He's still learning the game. He's still developing. But he's done so much for this club in the time that he's been here, which is why I get so annoyed when I see chat online about, you know, he's not good enough. He's not an elite manager. He's not this. He's not that. I want him to grow and develop with us as we grow and develop as a club. And I genuinely think, I know what we said at the start, he could be with us for years and years and years. We just have to give him time. I think he's brilliant. I genuinely do. And I think he loves this club. And we need that.
Oh, totally, yeah.
As Newcastle fans, we like to know that somebody loves us, and we like to know that somebody has come and taken it on and understands what it is, and somebody yeah. who gets it. And he gets it, doesn't he, George? He really gets it.
He totally
it.
Does. He totally does. Obviously, the circumstances at the club are now vastly different to before he arrived. We know that. You know, there's ambition at the club. Obviously, we're going through a sort of interesting period right now about what sort of progress looks like and what happens kind of moving forward. But he benefits from that. But he's talked, you know, he's not a romantic man. He's not a romantic manager. He's not like Kevin Keegan or Sir Bobby in those terms. But he does stir romance, and he's talked about wanting fans to dream. There's been that very interesting thing he's done on the training pitch where they've really embraced the club's history. They've brought back people like Alan into the training ground and Shay Given, plenty of others. And they're now celebrating their past heroes, people who felt that the club had turned its back on them. And that is really valuable. And so he does recognise that sort of sense of romance. He does recognise, you know, the word expectation is the word I really hate about Newcastle. Although, you know, the bigger the club gets, you sort of feel that stirring. You feel that kind of great stirring and restlessness that we've always had. And he understands that and sees it. And obviously, I'm desperate to see Newcastle win something, but I would love it in particular for Newcastle to win something, you know, with this team and with this manager, because I think they deserve it. I think we deserve it, but I think they do.
Just on that, I want to mention briefly two different sides of the coin in terms of the, when you mentioned exactly that and seeing how in that specific position as someone who comes in and it doesn't matter who Newcastle are against, that for him, Newcastle are there to compete is the words that he said. I remember really thinking that maybe Newcastle were onto something special at Spurs in October 2022 when Newcastle went there against a very good Spurs side, were very, very, very good, deserved to win 2-1, and then sat in the amphitheatre at Spurs Stadium after the game, which is basically like if you've ever been at a university lecture and in a massive, it's a sort of a massive lecture theatre. And Eddie Howe is sat in there in a club which just a few months previously were in serious relegation trouble. And basically just the way, just suddenly the way that he spoke after the match and basically like, yeah, this is just a start. We need to build from this.
Yeah.
And that sort of never settling for where Newcastle are and always wanting better. That sort of said to me at that point, that was when my sort of thought about him changed in terms of maybe this guy is the person who can take Newcastle to the next level. And then the other one would actually be in the summer in Germany. And the last few months have really been, other than those first couple of months when Newcastle were still in serious relegation trouble, the real first time that you've maybe seen a difficult period for Eddie Howe, a sustained difficult period in terms of everything that's going on at the club and then results in recent weeks. And if we'd been speaking a week ago, there were some people, certainly on social media, who were almost suggesting that Eddie Howe's position could be potentially under threat in the not too distant future if they didn't have a good week. Suddenly a positive week and things flip. But really this third year or the start of this sort of third full season has been different to the previous ones. And it'll be interesting to see how Newcastle progress from here, how Eddie Howe progresses from here and where the club can build, because it feels like after that massive upward trajectory, there has been a bit of a plateauing and can Eddie Howe be the one who takes them back to that next level again?
Well, in Eddie Howe's words himself, I am all in and I hope he's with us for a very, very long time. Okay, let's have a quick break. Back to talk about the lasses in the moment and Forest.
Come on, you Maggies.
Plenty going on with the men this week, but we must find time to recap the Lasses' superb win at League Leaders Birmingham on Sunday. Early goal at St Andrews, scored by Shania Hales, assisted by Beth Lumsden. Both players in red-hot form at the moment, George?
Yes, Hales was our October Player of the Month. She got that brilliant hat-trick, didn't she? And it's full of goals. And yeah, again, you see what happens with that kind of confidence and momentum, and carried that forward. Haven't seen the highlights, have to hold my hands up. Haven't seen the highlights of the match, but sounds like Newcastle were sort of certainly dominant in the first half. And yeah, it's just great, isn't it?
Yeah, they're doing really well. They weathered an intense, sustained period of pressure from the host, with Claudia Moan making great saves and the woodwork helping out as well. But there were chances on the break, and substitute Isabel Sibley got a first league goal with 20 minutes left. That two-goal cushion was invaluable. They looked fairly assured seeing off the game. Obviously, those two late wobbles at home are still sitting fresh in everybody's memory. They're only 2 points off the top at the moment with a game in hand as well, Chris. They're looking good.
Yeah, I mean, after the sort of difficult Durham defeat, they've responded very, very well to that. And I think they really are starting to adjust to this level. And it's going to be very, very tight at the top of that league. There's only a few points separate five teams. But for Newcastle to be in that conversation at this early stage, just that it's such a positive that they have been able to step up to this level.
It really is. We've got a little audio question here from Josh Downey.
Am I alone in thinking that triple promotion is very much yet on the cards? And I think it's been apparent, as we can see from the results versus Durham and others, that there is definitely another tier to the levels here that we're playing against teams. But at the same time, they don't look out of place. They look very competitive. And to be honest, I think maybe with a little bit of lessons and some luck in the second half, triple promotion could very well be on the cards.
That is Josh, my Philly brother, if you remember.
That's right, yeah.
Who, of course, came across for the Women's Cup final last season. Brilliant to see him. He's coming across to Newcastle at the start of next year. Look forward to seeing you, Josh, and thanks for that question. I think you've summed it up brilliantly. I think like at the start of the season, it's almost like there was a target on Newcastle's back. It's people, you know, like wanted to play them. Here come the upstarts. You know, they've got the investment behind them. Let's see what they're made of. And I think now teams will be fearing playing Newcastle again. I'm not saying that from a position of arrogance. I just think the way Newcastle are adapting to it, I think it's great. They've had a couple of bloody noses in terms of those, you know, that couple of sort of late disappointments. But those things are so valuable because it's what you learn from, you know, win after win after win is brilliant, but it's from those disappointments that you truly learn. And, you know, they're taking it in their stride. It is, as Chris said, it's incredibly tight in the championship. You can't predict what's going to happen, but that was another statement. That was another statement on Sunday.
Yes, huge games every single week for the Lasses at the moment. They head to Bristol next. That'll be a simultaneous 2 p.m. kickoff on Sunday with Eddie's men at the City Ground. They'll be up against some high-flying alumni as well, won't they? Chris Woodbappe, I think, is what we've called him on the running order here. I'm not sure how that scans.
Woodbappe. Can we do better than that?
Wodinho, yeah. Probably is the best.
Chris Wodinho. Chris Wijnaldum. Okay. Yeah.
Chris Wijnaldum is not bad.
He's got 8 goals in his last 10 Premier League outings. He's turned it on for Forest this season, Chris, hasn't he?
He's been excellent. He's in the form of his life, and he's the reason why Forest are in the top 3 in the Premier League. Have really confounded all pundits. And yeah, the thing for Newcastle was that he was always available. He didn't necessarily score the goals, but that he has been a huge miss for Newcastle. Now, maybe he needed to be in a side which maybe plays more to his strength and where he's better suited. And seemingly that's why he has found at Forest. But yes, when Newcastle haven't had two fully fit senior strikers for the best part of all of 2024, seeing Chris Wood scoring so many goals has made quite a few Newcastle fans understandably long for Chris Wood being back, because it would have been very handy to have him. But no, I'm really pleased to see him doing well there, because he did a very, very important job for Newcastle when he did come in.
And despite those goals, Elliot J. Anderson.
Whoa. Why are we only saying the middle initial of players who have J? What is going on here? Edward J. Howe, Elliot J. Anderson. What's going on there?
It's just in the running order, so I said it. Jesus, I know, but... Christ.
Okay, just thought I'd point that out. Anyway.
Yeah. Despite those goals, Elliot J. Anderson. Is it like Homer J. Simpson? Is it literally just J? Is that what it is?
Must be.
He's on course to be Forest Player of the Season at the minute, and had an absolute canter as well. The sight of the Jordi Maradona slaloming through Leicester's defence made us all very happy and also very sad at the same time, George, didn't it?
Yeah, and this was another thing that that Sean talked about after the Arsenal game about, you know, sometimes players need to get away, and it's like nobody wanted Anderson to leave Newcastle in the summer. It was a source of huge regret to Eddie Howe. You know, you sort of think you put that effort into developing someone and you don't kind of get to reap the rewards. Let's not get on to PSR and the kind of mess of that, that selling your own homegrown players is the sort of answer to that, or the easiest answer to that. It is very sad. At the same time, you know, other players have talked about this, the process of leaving your own club or the club where you've been brought through and making that move. You're suddenly a senior player. So like, for example, Alan Shearer, Alan from work, he talked about Southampton, that he went there as a kid. And he was always going to be seen as a kid at Southampton. He then moves to Blackburn for a big fee, and he's suddenly seen as a senior player, as a senior professional, and he feels different. And it, you know, it helps that Anderson's playing week in, week out. It helps that he's not injured, of course.
Yeah.
Delighted for him, delighted for Chris Wood as well. But yeah, it gets you in the heart a bit, doesn't it? Because
it does.
You'd want him to be doing that for Newcastle in an ideal world.
Absolutely. So, I've got a great Elliot Anderson story if we've got a little bit of time for it. If not, we can always cut it out. But I was doing a gig one night in Newcastle on the Quayside. There was somebody there who was friends with a few of the Newcastle United squad members. And in the middle of one of the songs that I was playing, and I believe it was She's Electric by Oasis, and I was singing the version with Joe Linton in the second verse, this lad held up his phone and showed the screen to me. He was in the middle of a video call, and on the screen watching me play that song was Elliot Anderson sitting on his bed in the house.
Was it Elliot Anderson? Was it Elliot J. Anderson?
It was Elliot J. Anderson sitting watching me play She's Electric and singing along to the Joe Linton words as I was playing it, which I thought, this is the most fucking psychedelic gig I've ever done in my life. But it was, I really enjoyed that. It was good fun. Anyway, I thought I might mention that. Right. Forrest, third in the Prem at the moment. The Prem, I can't say that. Fuck off. Nottingham Forest, a third in the Premier League at the minute. That cup
in
win.
In the Premier J League. Premier J-
that cup win looks better in hindsight as well, Chris, doesn't it?
I don't know if it does. I know they're playing well, but I don't. I mean, it was Newcastle scraped through on penalty. It wasn't as if Newcastle went there and no. I don't know if it changed anything, but that's just
fair enough. Gordon, Isak and co. Still need to find consistent performances away from St James's Park, though, George. Don't they? That away form is still an issue.
Yeah, that's fair enough, and absolutely, that becomes the next test for them. But on the form that they've showed over the last couple of days, there's no reason, you know, there's no reason why they can't go there and get a positive result. Forest have been outstanding this season. I mean, that is arguably the story of the season so far, certainly one of them. So it's not an easy challenge, but you want Newcastle to, you know, if Newcastle show the levels of commitment and defensive solidity and aggression that they've shown in the last couple of matches, they're more than capable of going something there.
Yeah.
Just very briefly, in terms of, I mentioned about confidence was the message that was coming out pre the Chelsea home game. The sort of immediate responses after Saturday game was looking for, and basically saying, we need to do this away from home. So there's a recognition inside the club that that's the next step now.
Lovely stuff. Right, just what you need at the end of the busiest show in recent memory. One or two news lines that have yet to be addressed. Chris, the FSA held a series of demonstrations last weekend as part of their Stop Exploiting Loyalty campaign.
Yeah, basically, just very briefly, this had happened. Newcastle fans groups were involved away at Stamford Bridge the previous weekend, and then at St James's Park this weekend as part of this campaign, because 19 of 20 Premier League clubs have raised prices for home tickets this season, and it's a sort of continuing theme. And there's obviously the £30 price cap for away games, but basically the idea behind this is to try and raise awareness for this, that home supporters that are almost being priced out of these situations. So I spoke to Adam Stoker from War Flags, who were one of many fan groups who held up a banner outside the Sir Bobby Robson statue before the game against Arsenal on Saturday.
Yeah, so over the last few months, fans from all across the Premier League have been getting together on meetings and to discuss what to do about the increase in ticket costs. So this particular season, 19 out of 20 Premier League clubs have increased their ticket prices, obviously Newcastle being one of them. It's something to do as like a unified action across supporters across the division where shows fans as like, I think a lot of the reason why football fans, well, why loyalty is exploited is because when something happens to one fan group, they don't stick together, and this is something that can unite fans across the country behind one message that everyone agrees with. See, last week every single Premier League game there was a banner beforehand, and this week's the same plan as well, to have the Stop Exploiting Loyalty with fans from each club there.
Because I mean, obviously there's the away fans price cap, but for home tickets they are just rising and rising, and for supporters it's almost like some feel like they're getting priced out, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Premier League have announced a new record TV deal, and at the same time you're having record costs imposed on your supporters, so it just feels a bit unnecessary when you consider the impact of a price increase on supporters is much bigger than the impact of a price increase on clubs' balance sheets at the end of the season. And it's such a small amount of money that they benefit from. It's almost like you'd almost benefit more from being the one club that stands alone and goes, look, do you know what, we're not going to do this, we don't have to do it, we don't want to do it, we're not going to make that happen for our supporters. Something's going to have to be done for home tickets, because it's at what point do you stop? Like, without Newcastle fans have had two consecutive seasons of 5% price increases with a 14-year 10-year deal this season. That impact is going to be felt by a lot of supporters, so sincerely hope that we don't have another increase this year on the back of that.
I mean, the obvious response from clubs and other clubs will be PSR, and you said it's such a small amount on the balance sheet. Do you think that's just an easy excuse for them to be able to give?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you saw from Newcastle's own PSR crisis this summer, the 5% increases didn't do anything to help us there, and I'm not exactly sure they'd have much of an impact again. So it's a choice, it's not a necessity, it's a choice, and I would like to see more clubs understand that and act as a result.
And loosely connected to that, the club have implemented some changes to the ticketing system as well, specifically the timeline of balloting and stuff like that. We'll hopefully get into that on a bit of a quieter week. I don't think we have the time to do that right now, as this has been such an epic episode. Emails. Let's just do this one quickly before we finish off. Me and my son Alex have flown in from Philadelphia this week for his master's graduation and are taking in the game at St. James's Park this week after a 23-year absence. It's going to be emotional. We'll be visiting Greg's for a couple of pork Wellingtons pre-game.
Pork J. Wellingtons.
Wellingtons. And heading to the Percy Arms in Warbottle. My parents were the landlords there in the 70s. Give our love to George's mum, who must have the patience of a saint for putting up with him.
What?
And keep up the great work. You put a smile on my expat Geordie face every week. Thanks, Mike. There we go. Love to your mum, George.
Thank you, Mike. Jay.
Mike J. Person. Thanks to everyone who got in touch this week with voice notes as well. Keep them all coming in. Blue Sky looks like it might provide a viable lifeboat as Elon Musk slowly submerges Twitter/X. We're on there at podonthetine.bsky.social, and in emails as well, please send them in. Of course, the address, as always, is podonthetine@theathletic.com. Right then, chaps, I think that's just about it. Pod on the Tyne was brought to you today by the letter J and the numbers 1, 2 and 0. Thank you to George J. Colgan.
You're very welcome. Actually, my middle name is Danger, as everyone knows. It isn't. It's Benjamin.
Oh, lovely. Okay. And thanks to Chris J. Wolf.
You're very welcome. I'll return to where I started this podcast, and I'll actually retract what I said, that we're all we are very good at what we do, because I suppose on the evidence of this 75-minute podcast.
What would Chris's J stand for?
Joke? No, we can't.
No.
Jowl.
Jowl. Jowl.
Jowl.
It'll have to be meat-related in some sense, but I can't.
Christopher Javelin Wolf.
Wow, that's... probably move on.
I've been Taylor J. Payne. Thank you very much for listening. Have a great week. Look after yourselves. From everybody at Pod on the Time, goodbye.
Yeah, but there was a lot to talk about, wasn't there?
The Athletic FC Podcast Network.